Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Iskan founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki,
yeah.
Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki,
yeah.
Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki,
yeah.
Prem Sega Hosri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Srivas Adigaura Pakta Vrinda ki,
yeah.
Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopagopina Shamakunda Radha Kunigiri Govindhana.
Yeah.
Shri Vrindavan Dhamma ki,
yeah.
Shri Mayapur Dhamma ki,
yeah.
Ganga Maya ki,
yeah.
Jamuna Maya ki,
yeah.
Bhakti Devi ki,
yeah.
Tulasi Devi ki,
yeah.
Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki,
yeah.
Jainatai Gaura Prema.
Yeah.
All glories to your Samadhi devotees. All glories to your Samadhi devotees.
Yeah.
All glories to your Samadhi devotees.
Yeah.
All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gaura. All glories to Shri Gaura. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So here we're discussing on page 68. We were discussing about that the principle of that only the devotee actually is akama, or free from all material desires. We are on number 4. The devotees enjoy a great festival of service to Lord Vishnu. They serve him and meditate on him, give charity to him, and offer the food in their homes to him. In this way they attain a result even the demigods headed by Indra cannot attain. So in other words, everything that they do is done for Krishna. That's Krishna's point, is that your charity, austerity, penance, charity and austerity. Is that the three? Then they are done for Krishna. Like that. The Supreme Lord himself said to Sri Kardama Muni, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:21-24, "My dear Rishi, O leader of the living entities, for those who serve me in devotion by worshipping me, especially persons like you who have given up everything unto me, there is never any question of frustration. So here also we know that he mentioned this is to Kardama Muni. Now Kardama Muni was a brahmachari who approached the Lord about getting an appropriate wife to get married. Right? He was a grihastha, so then when he said, "You've given up everything unto me," then one might wonder, well, no, but he's a married man. you know. But here it means that whatever one is doing, that is connected to Krishna. So the family is also connected to Krishna. That is offered to Krishna. That makes sense? So these things, why they're being brought out in such technical detail, is that it should be done practically, that it's actually what's happening. Right? Just lip service saying, yes, yes, we're Krishna conscious, yes, we do all that, but that generally means we're not. A sentiment is there maybe to do it, but whether it actually happens, that's something else. You know what I'm saying? So it's being brought out so that anyone in any situation is using whatever they're doing in Krishna's service. Right? Because even detachment has to be engaged in Krishna's service. You know what I'm saying? Detachment is not known. In the spiritual world, detachment is not known as a great quality, right? Because there's no material world there to be detached from. Right? So you're attached to Krishna. Does that make sense? So, therefore, even detachment, its value is that you're not attached to something that's going to take you away from Krishna. Right? Material energy can distract you from Krishna. So if you're detached from it, there's less distraction.
I wasn't sure which class this was.
It's just back to back. You know, it's just straight through. You just got to plug in at the right
time.
That's
why I can't play.
To keep going after this, it went from 9 to 11. Yes?
In the morning, you were mentioning that detachment doesn't mean to not care for. And what does in this meaning, how does it mean that detached from material world?
When you're dealing, okay, detachment here means, so the question was, is it in previous class we discussed detachment meaning that it's not indifference. It means performing one's duties without desire for the result. So that remain, that's still our definition here. But when we deal with the material world, detachment means indifference. Right? That's actually the difference between renunciation and sannyas. Sannyas means that there is indifference. Like generally we take it that the sannyas ashram is to be renounced. It is the renounced order. But the actual mentality is indifference. Does that make sense? So, like, let's say the vanaprastha is being austere, so they do not eat nice food, right, when they're performing their austerities. So then one would naturally think, well, the sannyasis even more. No, they're indifferent. They get nice food, they eat that. They don't get nice food, they eat that. They don't desire one and not like the other. We're talking about sannyas. We're not talking about us.
Which one are we talking about right now?
Huh? We're on page 68. Or maybe 67 for you. Just above the references from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's.
Okay.
Like that. We're on number 4. No, it's actually number 5. Does that make sense? So the indifference is to the material energy. But that doesn't mean that there's not duties performed, because in the material platform, then the person, maybe the jnani, is detached from material endeavor, but he also doesn't perform any. Right? There's no action in, they just have their own little community, they stay amongst themselves, that's it. The sannyasis hang out with that, that's all. Very minimal interaction with anybody else. So then, but here is what's being meaning, is that detachment is there, but one continues performing whatever one's natural duties are. So technically, if you perform your duties without desiring the result, means before, not that, okay, I'm going to do this duty and then give it to Krishna. That's renunciation. Sannyas means I'm doing this activity to please Krishna. So the result never in any way, shape, or form was mine to give to Krishna, because it's already Krishna's. Right? Does that make sense? That's sannyas. So one can be in any order of life and be sannyas. Right? So that's the point. But indifference is to material energy, but not to activity, not to devotional activity. Does that make sense? So that by worship, one will not only get one's desire fulfilled, but one will get the benefit of performing pure devotional service. There need be no worry about the desire. In other words, you focus on the desire, Krishna will take care of your needs. Right? In other words, you have a relationship with somebody, you simply worry about pleasing them. It's their business to take care of pleasing you. Right? Does that make sense? So, in the same way, if we just, all we're trying to do is please Krishna, Krishna will take care of us. It's just the natural thing. If we don't do that with Krishna, then we learn to do that here. Okay, we give everything for, you know, our children, or everything for the husband or wife, or everything for our community or country, or, you know, I work for my country will reciprocate, or I work for my family, they'll reciprocate, like this. So in here, but the point is you're not doing it because they're going to reciprocate. You're doing it because that's what you're supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to do means that's the position in which you'll actually taste the relationship you're looking for. Right? The father of the family will actually taste being a father if he is taking care of that family to the best of his ability without thinking, because I'm doing this for them, they're going to reciprocate like this. You know, oh, my child will smile, or the wife will smile, or she'll do some service, or the kids will come up and go, Daddy, Daddy, and give me a hug. If he does like that, it will drop it. It means you've done it, it will be there. But the depth of it, the quality of it will be less. Because you're looking for it. And because you're looking for it, material energy is so expert that exactly what you're looking for isn't what's available. Right? You go to the shop, what you were looking for isn't quite there. It's the wrong size, wrong color, wrong design. Close, but not quite. It's just her expertise. But if you're not expecting anything, then anything that comes is always nice. So it's always full. It's always complete. Right? So in the same way, so this is to learn that this is actually how we're supposed to deal with Krishna. We're just doing it because it pleases him. That's all. That's all we want to see. Whether we're pleased or not, that's not our consideration. But Krishna, he will always reciprocate. Right? But we don't make plans how to reciprocate. He'll reciprocate how he likes. What is best for us. You know? And means what's best for us means what is best for enhancing the rasa. So in the spiritual world, he does the same thing, but you don't have to avoid material attachment there. Right? But here, he has to take in consideration a conditioned nature, so this is the best thing for the rasa with him, but it has to be done in such a way that it's going to reduce one's material entanglement. Spiritual world is no material entanglement, so you simply have to nourish the rasa. But here, in nourishing the rasa, it will nourish the spiritual rasa, but it may not always work in the way we would think it would be to nourish the material. But it will. But he'll only nourish it when it's not going to disturb us. So if Krishna's not fulfilling our desire, that means it's because by doing that, it may distract you from his service.
If you're motivated by reciprocation, does that make the worship redundant?
If you're motivated by the reciprocation, does it make the worship redundant? No. It just means that that's a step forward, because it says if you have all desire or no desire, or want liberation or want to go back to Godhead, you approach the Supreme Lord. So you've gone to the right place. By performing that service, expecting reciprocation, then with time, if one sincerely does it to please Krishna, though one wants something back from it, then one will be purified and one will be able to actually realize the folly in that, right? And then we'll be able to move on. But better you're approaching Krishna for your material desires than pursuing material desires and leaving Krishna out of the picture, because he's the one that fulfills it anyway. You know? Does that make sense? It's just like, yeah. Means the kid wants a cookie, right? So he goes ask his mother if he can have a cookie. He gets a cookie. So he gets the pleasure of eating the cookie and the interaction with the mother. He doesn't ask the mother, he just goes takes the cookie. So he gets the pleasure of eating the cookie, but there's no reciprocation with the mother, so it's less. You know what I say? Plus, there's always the point that you're always worried that she'll find out. You know? That makes sense? So it also then puts something on. Same time as if you know you're stealing it, it gives it special taste, but then there's always, it's only the taste, it's not the, there's no relationship. Does that make sense? Six, therefore, whatever desires one may have, one should earnestly, tivrena, worship Yajeta, the Lord. That worship will eventually lead to pure devotional service. That is elaborately taught here. That worship will eventually, because you're doing it to please Krishna, though you have the other desires, so it will lead to Krishna, because that is your goal. Like that. As long as you don't forget that and get distracted by the facilities that come. Then, of course, it will lead you away. But if you keep that focused on Krishna, then going through these things, it will work. Like that. The demigods are not to be disrespected, nor should they be separately worshipped. Compare 11th purport, quote, apart from the gross materialists, who care very little either for God or for the demigods. The Vedas recommend worship of different demigods for different benefits, and so the demigods are neither false nor imaginary, is a key sentence. With this from Bhaktisandarbha, you're comparing this. One should not disrespect other deities, but rather one should honor them because of their relationship with the Supreme Lord. Worship of the demigods as if they are independent of the Supreme Lord is eloquently and vehemently rejected in these words. Free from all material conceptions of existence, and never wonderstruck by anything, the Lord is always jubilant and fully satisfied by his own spiritual perfection. He has no material designations, and therefore he is steady and unattached. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only shelter of everyone. Anyone desiring to be protected by others is certainly a great fool who desires to cross the sea by holding the tail of a dog. Right, so he said this very, very nicely. He said here, eloquently and vehemently. Yeah, like that, you know. Just, you know, it's like
it's a, yeah, like a fancy, you know, Wing Chun punch in the face.
Yeah, very. How you say? Gracefully executed.
Yeah.
Right, so see, there's trying to get a balance here. All these things are again and again from different angles trying to create a balance. Is that we don't worship the demigods, but at the same time we don't disrespect them. Right? We're not going after material desires, but at the same time they will be fulfilled by the performance of devotional service. Right?
Yeah, actually... I think it's important to mention, because this is a theme in the second canto very much. As we go through this canto, you'll see it more and more. This idea of macrocosm and microcosm. Hmm. So when we talk about the demigods, we're not only talking about the devas in their lokas, we're also talking about the demigods' their own body.
So that means you don't separately worship any particular part of your body.
You can, the same admonition here, you can just take in terms of the body.
Wow.
Itself.
That's very powerful. Yeah.
Because the demigods, the only reason our senses function is because demigods are located, making them work.
That's very powerful. Yeah, because it's just like if somebody overly gets into something, then people will think it's a trip, right? They overly get into, you know, a particular piece of clothing or some makeup or worry about their nose or their muscles or their as we were discussing before about their abs, right? You know, their stomach, you know, then there's a problem. So that's interesting. That's a very, very nice point. You understand that? Means in the same way as we don't worship the demigods separately than their connection to the Lord, we don't also take care of this body or anything connected to this body in our field of activities without connecting to the Supreme Lord. This is the same thing. This is everything that we deal with here, the demigods manage. And the only reason we're going to the demigods is to get something here. Right? You know, get some wealth or some beauty or a good wife or health or strength or... Does that make sense? Right?
So, yes, it says here, anyone desiring to be protected by others, the certainly great fool desires to cross over the sea by holding the tail of a dog. So you can just transpose that in terms of the body. For example, you know, we're gifted in different ways by our karma. And someone might be... Well, I can actually tell you a true, you know, very nice story that I heard from Vishnu Jana Maharaj. I might have told this a long time ago here, but it gives a good illustration. The first big Rath Yatra festival in San Francisco, I think it was 68. They had one before 67 where Lord Jagannath Baladev Subhadra were on the back of a truck.
Yeah, just sitting there in the line, yeah.
But then the next year they actually, you know, got a real cart, and it was in Golden Gate Park. That was the high point of the hippie era. So there were, you can see old black and white photos, how many, many people were there. And at one point, an Indian, I remember in those days, there were not that many Indians in the United States. Now there's quite a large community there. But in those days it was rare. And this was not only an Indian, he was a Bengali. So he was living in San Francisco. And he turned up. And so the devotees were having kirtan. And Prabhupada was... you know, chanting, and you can see there's a famous picture of Prabhupada,
yeah.
You know, chanting and dancing, the devotees all around. So then this Bengali gentleman, he asked one of the devotees if he could play the mridanga. And so the devotee gave him the mridanga, and, you know, in those days, there was just that verse, just that, you know, mridanga mantra, teeny teeny te, teo trakade, da da da. That was the only.
Yeah.
And then variations on
yeah,
that,
yeah.
You know.
And then where they play it, they use half of it, where the. You know,
yeah, the middle part, you know.
Yeah,
that's like.
Da, 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 da,
there were just two.
Basically,
really
two beats.
One beat, and they just play that one beat in like the whole beat or an abbreviated form of it. You know, and that's all the devotees knew. And but the kirtan, you know, you hear those kirtans from those days, and they're so blissful. So this Bengali gentleman, he got the mridanga, and he started. You know, he was like, I mean, he was a Bengali mridanga player, and he was just, you know, and all the thing, and everyone was astonished. I mean, you know, no one had ever seen anything like that, they were just amazed, and Prabhupada was appreciating. When Prabhupada saw him, you know, doing these things, Prabhupada was smiling and nodding and encouraging. And so everyone was like Hari Bol. And so for some while, a minute or so, kind of the focus of everyone was on this one man. And he was really jazzing it up, you know. Uh-huh. And but naturally, you know, that's not why everyone came to Radhyatra, to watch this guy play mridanga. So their attention went back to Lord Jagannath and Srila Prabhupada. And then he was just another mridanga player, you know, maybe playing a little more fancy, but no one was really paying attention to him anymore. And then he got frustrated. Vishnu Janamarsh told me, watched him. When he saw that no one's, you know, he's